Good evening and welcome to a very special episode of Red Moon Roleplaying. Tonight I am joined by some esteemed guests to delve into a very interesting realm indeed. Our first special guest is none other than Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig Campbell. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you for having me. You've set the mood very nicely. I'm ready. Here we go.
Thank you. And would you tell our dear listeners, who are you, Craig? And what are you here to show us tonight?
I'm Craig Campbell. I'm the owner and lead designer at Nerdburger Games. And I've published a number of games with the help of many, many fine freelancers. And I'm kickstarting a new game called Good Strong Hands, wherein the players portray fantastic fantasy folk and their human allies who have newly arrived to their homeworld of reverie, and they're battling against this faceless, malevolent entity known as the Void, which is threatening to destroy the world. Once again, the Void returns every few centuries and tries to destroy the world. And so we are going to delve into reverie. We're going to define it together and create our reverie as a group of players in GM, and hopefully take some steps toward saving it. And the game can play very light and fairy tale. It's inspired a great deal by movies like The Neverending Story and Labyrinth and Legend, Dark Crystal, Willow, things like that. But for the sake of Red Moon Roleplaying and your particular proclivities here, we're going to go a little bit darker. You're playing some of the darker characters, some characters who have been corrupted, who are perhaps a little too close to losing themselves and becoming agents of the Void, which is something that might happen in the game. The game is kickstarting as of September 22nd. That's a Tuesday. I believe this is going to be the day. That's today, hopefully, that this recording, the first episode, is going to be up. So you can go check it out there at Kickstarter. There'll be a link and all that sort of thing that I'll provide. And I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more about your characters and getting going.
Certainly. And what characters do we have tonight? Well, first, perhaps we will ask our next player, Jenny. Hello, Jenny. How are we this evening?
Oh, fine, of course. Always happy and anxious to be doing this with you guys, and really looking forward to portraying one of the Fae folk.
And who is your character tonight, in a word or two?
Yeah, my character is Beulah, and she is basically a red cap. So she likes, well, she pretends she doesn't like violence, but she does, of course.
And of course, we are joined by the one, the only, Hjalmar. Hjalmar, hello!
Hello there, Craigie boy, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
I'm fine.
This is going to be...
How are we going to deal with
confusing.
This?
I will keep this simple. I will refer to you by your character names.
Wow. That's good always stuff. Logical. And Hjalmar, who will you be playing tonight?
I have decided to settle on a fawn. And I have named said fawn Irohanda. And I look forward to portraying someone who likes getting people to do things, especially daring, dangerous things. A kind of rude, inconsiderate person, and a bit of a bully.
Oh dear, looking forward to it. And of course, it's me, Craig, and I'll be playing tonight Seth the Sylph, who's actually not that bad a fellow, really. I'm quite a curious, honest, energetic person, but, you know, maybe I'm a little bit flippant and maybe could be easily dared to do things by certain people, so we shall see how that goes as I fly around being a spirit of the wind. But enough of our characters for now. I will hand it over to you, Mr. Campbell. Lead us into your world, your dark tale for tonight.
This time, when the Void comes, it comes quietly and in secret, and before the world of reverie knows it, it is plunged deep into darkness. Cities burn, a mountain range has fallen, a lake boils, and many have been killed or displaced from their homes. the three of you found yourselves amongst the heroes attempting to stop the void from destroying your beloved home of Reverie, and you have succeeded some. But things look bleak. And just when they were at their bleakest, the group of you learned a little something more about a legend from the last time the Void was here. 250 years ago, when the Void came, it manifested near the end of its attempt to destroy Reverie as a great beast, gigantic beast, one the size of a village. A great hero used a powerful weapon to fell that beast, and in the process opened a great scar in the world. A ravine, a deep, dark ravine, known now as the World Scar. And that beast's body lies still rotting slowly at the bottom of this ravine. It is believed by some sages, some scholars, some mystics that the weapon that was used by this hero might be used to reinstill some sort of light in this beast and bring it to the surface as a servant of the world Reverie. But it's a dangerous place to go. And the group of you are on your way there. No one else was prepared or near enough to handle to heed the call. As you traverse across an open plain, you see ahead a crack in the world, a blackness, and you know you are getting closer and closer to the world scar, where this great beast lies. As you walk, as you approach, as you prepare to hopefully save your world, you share stories of this last time the beast was here, of when the void was here, and when this beast was here, and when it was slain. Anyone wish to chime in? What was this beast? Let's decide. It was the size of a village. It could be anything you can imagine.
I heard that it had a singular eye, and the eye saw everything. Like, it could see through your bones, into your skull, into your mind, and it saw everything. But it was really big as well, and green. That's what I heard, anyway, I think.
Yeah, and it had tusks. Tusks. Yeah, tall as mountains, like higher than the buildings of said village that it was the size of.
And it used
them to tore up things from the ground. Entire forests were turned over because it dug down. Isn't that how it was?
I think so. And didn't it have like 100 legs or arms? You couldn't really tell. It was a bit like a spider, but like a really big, strong spider, kind of.
Didn't it have wings as well? Small wings that they flapped to, you know, distort the air around it.
It's like you couldn't see it coming. It kind of stirred up the whole ground around it. It was this cloud that you just saw from a distance, because it stirred up like everything that would fly about it, not like just dust, but everything that it destroyed would form this cloud around its quickly flapping, like, insect-wide wings. Yeah, that's how it was.
Yeah. Oh, big and scary. But, you know, it's fine now because, you know, I'm sure when it's a nice monster, it will look nicer, right? That's how it works. No? Yes? Maybe?
Maybe. We will find out, won't we?
Maybe it will have two eyes this time.
Who was this hero that defeated it?
Well, it was a fawn, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure it was a fawn.
No, it wasn't a fawn. It was a human, wasn't it? That's what they do, right? Humans do the thing.
Wasn't it a human girl?
Yeah.
And she had a stupid name like Catherine or Linda or something like that.
Humans have weird names. They don't make any sense. And it's like, she wasn't like super massive or anything. It was more that she was like, she had like one of a thing which makes little bits of wood fly out. I don't know why you need that, really. Bows and arrows, they're a bit, you know, when you can just do it yourself. But yeah, she had one of those.
Yeah, she was so quick when she handled that. She would jump from place to place, and she never had to come close to the thing until the very end.
Yeah. Which, you know, again, because it's human, so, you know, squishable.
Yeah.
That's what they do. Get squished a lot.
It can be funny. Well, no, not really, but a little bit.
And this girl, as humans often do, it is believed, left Reverie, returned to her home. Humans are not from Reverie, but they have occasionally traveled to your land. And you've perhaps only met a few in your lives, even for those of you who are longer lived. And those who come often do not stay terribly long, although some sometimes do. Now, you remarked that she was an archer. She used a bow. What was special about the arrow, supposedly, the legends say, that slew the beast?
They were made from all the different creatures had come together, and they all forged them with something from their own.
Yeah, and it was something like it could pierce anything, even forts. Which I didn't understand, personally. How can you pierce a fort? It's in your head. But apparently it could. I don't know.
And you know, as every other weapon would fail against the void, because it would be just consumed by the void itself, somehow these arrows would go in and they would wound and they would somehow reappear back at the bow again once they had hit their mark, so they never got a chance to be consumed.
It also had rapid fire, which was, that was fun. I liked that.
Oh, it was...
Well, you don't have to be quick if you know where to strike, do you?
No, but being quick helps, you know, because when you are quick, you start.
So many legs, too.
Oh, so many legs. So many legs.
And as you reminisce and trade legends, and some of it may be true and some of it perhaps is not, you find yourself now at the lip of the ravine, looking down into the depths of the ravine. It is an overcast day, as many days have been for the past several weeks. The sun has not shone brightly for some time. There's a bit of cold in the air, a breeze. Seth, you know this untimely north wind that is blowing. It's not the right time of the year. It is summer. It should be warmer. But the north wind has arrived early. You look down into the crevice and see that it doesn't get as dark down in the ravine as you would think that it would. Normally, any light from above is going to be the location of the sun will be cut off by the lip of the ravine. Some indirect light will get down, but the sides of this ravine are flinty. And there, a great many of the rocks there are reflective, and so light continues to sort of bounce and permeate down into the ravine. And partway down the side of the ravine, you can see that there is a woodkin, a tree person, who was perhaps at one time standing on a small ledge, but you can see clearly now they have been standing there long enough that you know this happens. They have rooted themselves in place. They have not moved. You would guess, perhaps for decades. And as you look down into the ravine, into the depths, you see at the very bottom there is a cloud of debris and detritus being kicked about, flying about. You cannot see beyond the edge of the cloud. There's something down there that is disturbing the floor of the ravine. And this woodkin, a good 50 feet down the side of the ravine, creaks its ancient neck and looks up to you and motions toward you with one branched hand to come closer to it.
I grow silent out of this jovial mood almost that I'd gotten into sharing these experiences, or rather the legends of how it happened the last time, and I start itching my black, greasy fur a bit uncomfortably seeing this, and now that we're actually here, I just look down and I frown. Yeah, so this is it.
Get out of the way, Fawn. I step forward and I push you to the side a little bit more brusquely than I would have needed to, and I start making my way down. Are you gonna stand there all day? This world won't be saved when you scratching your butt.
I wasn't scratching my butt. It's my leg. It was a... Something bit me.
Can't happen.
Fine.
I go to stand over the ledge, balancing perfectly over, but also on one leg, just peering down. I am a quite typical looking sylph, quite windy, translucent. I do have some physical clothing that's more just like a few rags, really, and a little pack which I keep trinkets in. But my actual physical form is very insubstantial and very light. So as I'm balancing over, I'm just watching Beulah, and with my sky senses, do I see anything that makes it seem there's a safe way down rather than just directly climbing?
Can you tell us what sky senses do?
Sky senses means that I get advantage on mind checks using my senses.
All right, well, let's make our first check, basically, in the game. You've got four traits: body, mind, charm, and heart. Body is everything physical about your character. Mind is everything intellectual, and including your senses. Charm is everything social and charismatic about your character. And your heart is your internal fortitude, your strength of will, your resolve. And for those of you who have taken a talent that has the magic keyword, charm is the check that you'll make to perform minor, simple magics. And so if you want to try to do something like that, bring it up and we'll talk about that a little bit in more depth as well. Each of those traits is rated between 1 and 4. Higher is better. And you will roll a number of D6s equal to your rating. And in this case, you have advantage, so you gain a die. Versus a target number that I set, which is anywhere between 4 and 6. I will always tell you what that target number is because it's important to know exactly how many dice hit that target number. You're trying to hit the target number or higher on at least one die. Your target number for this is going to be a 4.
I got a 4 and a 5.
So when you make a trait check, if you fail the check, you don't succeed in doing the thing, I, as the GM, will potentially introduce some sort of complication, and you would mark a skill. You have a track of skill that, and since this is a darker game, we're going to set the track to actually only be 7 long instead of 10. Normally there's 10. The game has a complexity dial, intensity dial is what I want to say, in it, where we can make it a little bit easier to fill those tracks up, and those have different effects. So you've all got current ratings in those tracks. We'll set these to 7, which means three of those boxes on your sheet are permanently filled in. Just fill them in and never think about them again. You would mark a skill, and if you fill up your skill track, you can advance your character and gain something. You advance by failing. If you succeed on your check with exactly one die being successful on the target number, you mark a spirit. And spirit is a currency that you can spend to do a variety of things, including most commonly you spend it to use some of your more powerful talents. There are talents that are described specifically as having to spend a spirit to use. And you can also spend a spirit to gain a die on a trait check. And that is that die is in addition to any dice that you would gain from advantage. And then if you succeed on your check with 2 or more successes, which you just did, you succeed very, very well. You gain a boon, which means that everything goes really well and you get a little something extra out of it. But you also mark shadow, because the void notices you being very, very good at what you're doing. You're showing that you're a hero by being incredibly successful at things, and the void sees that, and so it plants the seeds of corruption in you, and you mark shadow. Once you fill up your shadow track, you'll erase all those, and you will gain a corruption. And I believe all of you have at least one corruption already. as we talked about the characters having been fighting the fight for a time. So we'll see if any of those come into play. And those are just dark powers that are fueled by the void. If you ever gain all of your corruptions and fill up your shadow track again, your character falls to the void and becomes an agent of darkness. And you don't get to play them anymore unless you manage the your friends manage to redeem you in some way. So you succeeded with two dice, yes? Two successes? In the game, we refer to a success on a die as a hit. So you got two hits there. You mark a shadow. And you look down, you see that there are handholds and footholds. It's not a sheer surface, so it is climbable here. There are places, some rocks and small trees that are a little bit further away from the edge of the ravine. You could tie off rope if you have it. You could lower yourselves down into the ravine or part of the way that way. The ledge area that the woodkin is on is large enough to fit at least two of you, but then Seth, you fly, so less of an issue, which is handy. And you also notice as your boon that there's a distortion in the air, starting just next to the outcropping that the woodkin is standing on, and it sort of extends up like you're looking through the air, and there's something not quite right about it. There seems to be a little bit of a shimmer or a little something. If you've ever seen Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade, when he's at the crevice, and there is in fact a bridge there. There's something hidden, so you can tell that there's something built, perhaps from magic, into the side of the ravine, but it's just barely visible, and you've just managed to glimpse a bit of it.
I quickly glide very fast to Beulah's side as Beulah's beginning to start scrambling down. I kind of do a thing where I stand on the cliff face, facing a weird direction, but to me it's completely natural. And I start saying, Beulah, first of all, use the footholds, you silly, silly sausage, because come on, you'll fall otherwise. You should listen to me, I know things. And second of all, look, Irahanda, there's something down there. Look, there's a thing. Maybe it's a trap. Be careful.
I don't fall over, Seth, but thank you. Anyways, I'll use which footholds?
The foothold right there. Isn't it obvious? Oh my goodness. Come on, people. Use the eyes.
Aren't you going to go in the foothold, Beulah? You want to go down there? Come on, go on down there.
I am going there. What are you... Ugh, fawn.
I swallow and I watch Beulah start to go down, and I try to look for this... what Seth described as a thing down there. And then slowly start making my way after.
Beulah has no idea what Seth was talking about, and sees no footholds whatsoever, but she will, of course, not let that show in any way. So she's basically taking a leap of faith and just starting down towards wherever Seth was gesturing.
Okay, you're going to start climbing down the side. Let's cover a bit of information about like what your character looks like, and specifically, what article of clothing, a cap, a scarf, a cloak. You have one that is deep, deep red all the time because it has been painted with the blood of things you have fought.
Yeah, I think it's a cap. It's a big, baggy cap that keeps... almost like one of those Rastafarian hats that they put all their dreadlocks in.
A big bag on.
Yeah, basically, because
so.
That's what
yeah.
Beulah has, a really, really messy, big, just one big braid almost, you know, that it's just like twigs sticking out of it and dirt, and it's like, yeah, probably bloody as well, but she keeps that more or less rolled up into this big, big kind of baggy hat, cap that she keeps on her head. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, all the clothing she's wearing is dirty, very dirty.
All right, time to climb down.
Yep.
Let's see a body check from you.
Yep.
Target number 5.
And I get a 6. And a 4 and a 3 and a 1, but that doesn't help.
Mark a spirit.
Yep.
You start making your way down, just climbing, holding on to bits of outcropping and rock. You know, it's like one of those kids' climbing walls, the rock walls. There's a number of places to put your feet and your hands. It's slow going, but you're making your way down. Irohender is, she's doing it. Are you suitably impressed?
Well, I was hoping for, something fun to happen. She is doing it. And that means that I have to do it too, I think. So, unless I can somehow use my very springy legs. I have a talent called bounding legs to just jump down there.
Yes, what does the talent specifically say?
Normally it says you can jump up to 30 feet vertically or horizontally without a running start. And I don't know if that's counts for jumping downwards as well.
Well, I think it probably implies that you can, after a long jump, you can reasonably land on your feet and not topple over. So you could perhaps jump to the outcropping that the woodkin is on without any real difficulty. This would, given that because it is a talent and it's a straight up description of what you can do, this would be you can jump down 50 feet. Sure, why not?
I am going to hesitate for a bit, and then, seeing that Beulah is, she's getting down there all right, and of course Seth is just gonna smoothly hover down. Well, I'm not gonna be beaten by any of that. I'm gonna show them that I'll get there first, and I take that challenge, and I just gather myself and I jump down, holding on to my sling that is, what do you call a sling bag? Like a side bag?
Oh, like a ruck, a rucksack?
Like, yeah, I hold on to my rucksack and I take a leap.
And you leap down and you land next to the woodkin. A good, solid, sure landing on your hooves. No loss of balance. The woodkin looks over to you a bit startled, but then smiles. But as they do it, you see that the smile on their wooden face, it creaks as they do this. And they move rather slowly to react. And you are standing there. Quick description of what you look like, and are you carrying a particular... all fawns are known for some manner of performance, as being a specialty, and so if we can make that out from you perhaps carrying an instrument, let us know as well.
Irohander used to be a fairly well-kept fawn. My friends would know this, but since our venture is into, the struggle with the void, things have deteriorated slowly, and the normally well-kept black fur is now kind of tufty, it's greasy, and the horns are greasy as well, and eyes slightly feel like they're a bit almost hollowed out, a bit dark, and there's this kind of glum look most of the time on his face, except when he succeeds at something exceptionally well. I have this rucksack slung across my back, and inside of it I carry a xylophone. Those that are kind of the style of a marching band, that kind of goes up on two sides. It kind of looks like a lyre, but it has, instead in the middle, it has these bands of metallic plates that I can strike with a little stick.
Is it on a harness? Do you attach it to like around your belt and your shoulders, or did you hold it in one arm and strike it with the other hand?
I would hold it in one hand and strike it with the other, I think, normally.
All right, and down you go, boom, and you land. Nothing goes toppling over the side. Seth, the flying self is left alone at the top of the ravine.
Yes, I get a little annoyed that Irahander got down first, because I wasn't expecting him to jump, and that wasn't in the rules. He should have set the rules, so I quickly then just immediately appear right next to him, even though he has successfully got down there first. And I'm like, well, you know, I would have done that too, if you'd let me know.
Well, you didn't. I didn't feel the need. And I look up at this big tree, woodkin, that is standing in front of me. What do you think? What do you think of that?
The woodkin looks to you and says, "Impressive. I have not been entertained in some time."
Well, I'm all about that, the entertainment. What's your name, woodkin?
I am Folan.
Folan. I'm Irahander.
I am pleased to meet you.
Yes. Everyone's pleased to meet everybody. Now, why are you here? What are you doing here? This is a place, this is a dangerous place, and you're here, and what's that over there? I point at the strange shimmering effect, like there's a secret. You've got a secret. Does that let you get down safely?
As Beulah arrives, he speaks and says, I am here waiting for you, I suppose. I have been here for nearly 3 centuries, waiting for when someone or someones will come to this place for, and he turns and his neck creaks and he looks down, will come for that, for the beast.
You mean the beast is down there right now? That movement is the beast?
It has never left. Down at the bottom of the ravine, it rots, but slowly.
And you, too, were in such hurry to get down here. I hope you're not in a hurry to die as well, friends.
No, I thought it was supposed to be, like, dead. And then we'd make it come back to life. Why is it not moving?
The void never dies. This thing was as near to being truly the void as anything has ever been.
Weren't we supposed to have something to control it?
You have been sent to awaken the beast, then?
Yes.
Awaken?
Sort of. Maybe yes, no?
I was kind of hoping that, you know, there'd be any trace of, you know, what once defeated it. The bow. Have you seen the bow?
Oh, the woman's bow. I have not seen it. I do not know if she took it home with her or not. I don't recall it being in her hands or slung across her shoulder when she left this place.
I peer over the edge, and once again scratching my leg, kind of nervously.
All right then, so what's that? What's this thing? What's the thing that I can see? I can see it, but it's hard to see. The others, of course, can't see because they're blind. But you're not blind, right?
Oh, this on the side. And he reaches up to his own old tree body, which is a tree. He is a tree person. It is, you see bark. And he scrapes one hand across his shoulder and down his arm, and bits of bark crackle off, exposing wood beneath. And he throws these bits of bark against the wall next to the platform, the outcropping he's on, and a few of them tumble off and fall down the ravine, but some of them settle onto nothing. And as you look and your eyes adjust to what you're seeing, you see that they are settling onto steps carved into the side of the rock, or perhaps created by magics. You can see that there is a way to walk here, but you're going to need to mark the way as you go.
Ah, see, I look very happy and start clapping to myself. You see, I saw it. There you are, you two. Can you see now? Are you still blind? Look, if you even put things on it, it's even more visible.
Is that the thing you meant?
Yes, stairs. going down. Obviously, we need to go down. Okay, Mr. Falnor, so hang on a minute then. Do we have to beat up the beast? Because, I mean, you know, obviously we can. We're really good, you know. Even Beulah's really good, like, when it comes to, beating things up.
What do you mean, even?
Why did they make it like this? Why did someone make invisible steps down? Who did?
These steps were hidden so that fools would not come to see this thing. It is dangerous down there. The beast is dead, but it is not dead. As you can see, it creates the cloud about itself still.
I fold my arms in front of me, clearly dissatisfied with that I won't be able to jump down this time. Magic steps? What are you waiting for, Beulah? Why don't you start moving?
Yeah, Beulah, you go first, and I'll back you up, because, you know, I'm good at that, but you're the one to go first. And as I'm saying go first, I've already started stepping on the steps and sort of dancing back to a step, dancing back to Beulah, dancing back to a step.
Folin reaches his hands to his body again and starts scraping large pieces of bark from his arms, from his chest, from his hips and upper legs, letting it fall in a pile at his feet, which you can see are rooted and stuck. The root-like toes of his feet have broken into the rock and are holding him in place. And after just a short time, he has essentially sloughed off 50 or 60% of his skin, essentially, and left it in a pile of little pieces that can then... He takes a few pieces and says, "You can mark your way. My time here is almost at an end."
What have you been doing here anyways, Fallen?
Waiting for you, it seems.
I start gathering up a few... I just fill my hands, basically, with bark.
I take off my cap, my big baggy cap, and I start filling it up with the pieces of bark and, yeah, leaves and everything. And, you know, carry it with me as I start down the steps.
I suddenly start finding a bit of fun in this, and I start spreading them in front of you, Beulah, as you go, kind of like a wedding march, someone spreading petals of flower in front of and I bow and I throw them small clouds in front of you. Oh, march down, won't you, glorious Beulah? And I started bouncing around you.
You continue making your way down the side of the ravine, finding these hidden steps along the way. Every so often, Irohander, you find that you're not terribly far away from a spot where you could jump to a visible spot that is, just actual rock that you could. So you do get a chance to jump a few more times, even so much as to get out in front of Beulah and spread the bark around for her to arrive upon.
And then
as you
jump
go.
Back, I take it, yeah.
And wait for you to pass or bow and, you know, whatever it is he wishes to do to play out whatever he's doing here. The two of you get the impression that perhaps he's just trying to prepare himself for what's to come. As you get closer and closer to the cloud of dust, you start to see a form within. It's a shadowed form. You can't make out anything more than just generally the shape of it. But you were not terribly far off. It does have a great many legs. It appears like a massive centipede, more so than a spider, just given the number of legs. The body is very long and fat, although in spots there it is clearly misshapen. It is as if the body, the carapace of it has sunk in, has caved in some places. At one end of it, you see that there are two great pincher-like tusks that move ever so slowly back and forth. You can just barely make out the flutter here and there along its back of these small wings that you get the feeling they don't appear like they would be large enough for the thing to allow the thing to fly. But they certainly do keep this cloud going. As you get to the base of the ravine, you are closer to the head than you are to the tail of this thing by quite a bit. And you can see not far away the great bulbous head. And it's hard to tell if there's an eye or more, or two eyes, or what's happening there, but it's a massive head. Think of the height and size of this thing is, you know, easily, at its tallest, fattest, it's the height of a four-story building. And its legs are like small towers set on their sides. They're massive, like you couldn't, the three of you together could not lift one of these legs. And you see, again, the pinchers. And as you get a little closer and you hit the floor of the ravine, the pinchers snap shut. And then they open. And now they're opening and closing more quickly. Almost like it senses you.
And up until that point, I've been trying to increase my sort of singing, enjoying the echoing of the ravine, of Beulah descending gracefully down unto the mighty beast, and trying to lighten the spirit, convincing everyone how dead this thing is, even though it's obviously thrashing about in its, I don't know, death throes. And as the pincers snap shut, the sound just cuts off, and is left with this echoing of my voice just fading out in the middle of saying something silly. And I just stare at it, and a few splinters of wood just drop from my hands. Did you see that?
Yes, yes, sir. All right. We obviously need to give it a little final push to be dead, and then before we awaken it in the proper way. So, okay, it's fine. We've done this before. I will go and cause the distraction. When I cause the distraction, Beulah, Earhander, you go for the side.
Shouldn't we try to talk to it first?
Talk to it? It's the beast! The beast! What are you going to say? Stop being a beast!
I don't know. Hello, maybe?
You know, they were kind of wrong with the tusks. It's more like pincers, but you could probably pull up a house with one of those. Maybe a block of houses, actually. Maybe while it's still asleep, we can find a weak spot. I start looking around it, trying to find, you know, previous wounds, anything that could have been hurt before.
Earhander, give me mind check to give the creature a good look.
Could I somehow use my magic of emotion to sense previous grief or pain where something would have hurt this thing?
Okay, the minor magic works like this. And we may find a way to make this work. I'll just describe it. If you have a magical talent, and there's a keyword that tells you that it is, and it tells you what realm of magic is associated with that. What you can do with the minor magic is anything that you can imagine to think of that is also something that you could potentially do with a normal trait check. So if you could do something with body, mind, or charm, you could do it via minor magics with heart. For example, if you had access to the thought realm of magic, if you wanted to distract someone, you could use a charm check to talk to them and to get them focused on you and make sure that they don't look around. Like, so a friend could go do something behind their back. You're keeping their attention and keeping them distracted. So you could use thought magic to make a charm check and flood their mind with repetitive thoughts, or get them to obsess about one particular thought, something that will take their mind, and suddenly they're not paying attention to what's around them, and they're focused on what their mind is doing. So that sort of thing. So with your magical realm is emotion?
Yeah, I've got emotion and movement.
So you could For example, you could use a heart check with emotion to determine whether the thing was truly alive or not, which is something that you could if you examined it long enough with a mind check and spent some time just like figuring out what you know about centipedes and figuring out is it doing something reflexively? Is it, like Seth said, death throes? Is it really alive? You could determine whether there's any sort of emotional activity there going on.
I've never been really good with intellectual kind of things, you know, examination, going over stuff, analyzing stuff. I like having fun, and I like teasing people with emotions and filling them with things, and also use my heart in this way to sense things from others and get an idea of things. And that is what I then would like to try and do.
All right, let's make a heart check to essentially sense emotion to see what you can learn that about the basics of what's going on here, which is, you know, rather than studying the creature. Make a heart check, target number 4.
I have a 6 and a 5 for that.
All right, mark one shadow. And with a boon, this is where you end up. The creature is not expressing any emotion. It seems as though it is perhaps trapped in its final death throw. Like it's repeating it over and over and over, like it never truly dies, which would be in keeping with what Folan said to you, that the void never dies. However, with your boon, you recognize that there are 3 distinct emotions coming from within the body of the beast somewhere. There is someone or something that is expressing emotion, 3 of them specifically, that are inside that thing. They're all right now expressing fear and concern.
I hold up a hand as I had stopped for a bit, probing this thing and quickly feeling this. I say, wait a minute. There's something alive in there. There's 3 something alive in there. Something, someone. They're very scared.
What, you mean like it's eaten them?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
You recall the stories that the hero came here with friends, with compatriots. The stories, the legends that you've heard since don't speak a great deal of the compatriots, only of the heroes. Or of the hero woman with the bow. So you're not sure what happened to the compatriots.
What do you think?
I start fiddling with my trinkets. I don't know. Bugalo, you still want to talk? You can talk. Go on, then talk. I'm curious to see what happens when you talk.
I've been listening to Irohanda and Seth going about this, and while I've been emptying my cap of the rest of the bark and everything from before, and I'm kind of turning it over in my hands as I... So... Yes, talk. Should we open it, or should we get it to spit?
Can we open it? Can you open it, Beulah? You're good at opening things. Yeah.
Yeah, open it.
I can try, but I'm not. I've never opened one of these things before, so.
Well, it's for what I'll do the distraction. You know how we work. I'll go quick. It will follow me. When it's following me, you go for the belly. We'll start from there.
I can set it on fire, maybe.
That's always a start. I like it when you set things on fire.
I'll set it on fire, then.
All right, but hang on. I'll go first. And at that, before asking anything, I jump off the stairs, gliding, and I attempt to get the creature's attention using Speck on the Wind. Speck on the Wind means I'm incredibly fast. I can always catch what I'm chasing and can't be caught by anyone, not even red caps. So I just sort of dart forwards, try and get the attention of... I can't see the eye, but it must be there. The eye can see everything. It must see us. And I start trying to, like, dart about to make it move.
You start darting about in front of this thing's head, and the eye appears. It doesn't open. There's no lid. It just, it suddenly is there. And it's a great eyeball with countless irises.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played Good Strong Hands RPG, which is published by our friends at Nerdburger Games and is on Kickstarter right now. Our game master was Craig Campbell, who is the creator of the game, and we were also joined by Yeni Brembari. The music was created by Halgrath and was used with permission from their label, Cryochamber. Visit cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more music for your games. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoshobert, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, and David Hogbatty for their generous support. And we would of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult of Divinity Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show with a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. Thank you for listening, and see you soon again.